Welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence, live from the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. But I got a feeling our guest tonight is going to offer up their city in Texas as maybe a good contender with that. But we may argue about that a little bit later. But it's awesome to have you here tonight with us on this mid-August hot, hot day here in Texas. And the sun behind me has just gone down at the Texas Medical Center. And I work over there, Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital. And it's awesome to be affiliated with two of the best organizations, not only in the country, but I think in the world when it comes to the research and the studies that they do. And it's just an honor to be part of that. Next week on the show, we're going to have a really awesome guest. We had her husband on a few weeks ago, and she has her own story that she would like to share. And August 29th, Sunday evening, next weekend at 8 p.m. Central Time, Darlene Pritchard will be coming. We had Mike Pritchard a few weeks ago, and this is his wife, Darlene. She's going to be on with us all the way from the great state of California. So be part of that. September is already booking up to be a huge list of guests that's going to be on. And we'll talk to you about that when we go into the month of September. But if you want to get involved tonight, this is one of those shows that I want to preempt you up front, warn you up front, and say there may be triggers in our conversation tonight. If you have small children that are listening to this, you may want to just be prepared to turn down the computer or just keep your environment safe because this is a major story. It's a story that's been all over the news. It's been documented by the FBI, and it's got some raw material in it this evening. And I want our guest tonight just to be able to share his story and then what he's come through and how he made it through and what he's doing now to help other people that are dealing with the same thing. So I just want to let you know that up front. If you want to get involved in the conversation, and it very well may be that tonight, because we're talking about major organizations, and we're talking about unbelievable things that happen, horrendous things that happen, and you may have input, you may have questions for our guest, and the number to call with the wonderful people at BBS Radio, 888-627-6008. They will answer your call and put you right on through. And when the guests and I take a breath, we'll bring you in and we'll treat you like family. So just welcome to the program. 888-627-6008. It looks like my awesome son has Facebook up and running. So he's right there leaning on the edge of his chair waiting for you to get him involved on that side of the world too. And in the next few weeks, he's going to be moving to a military base in Seattle. So I'm going to lose my sidekick here in Houston up into Seattle. So maybe he'll be able to do some of the work up there for me and with me on the other side of the country, we hope. Tonight's guest is Richard Weinman, and he's from the wonderful city of Fort Worth, Texas. And folks, he was involved as a child, and I think if you see our emails that go out weekly with the upcoming guests, we put a unique one at his request. So I'm kind of glad we did, of what his picture looked like when he was going into the Boy Scouts at 8 years old. And it brings to me a new light of realness to this. Richard was sexually abused in the Boy Scouts by four leaders who literally passed him around, by sex crimes detective who worked the case who later jailed himself, later by the janitor and a priest at a Jesuit high school, and his childhood was just filled with sexual abuse. One thing that, because I'm going to let him tell the story without reading the rest of his bio, one thing that I love about Richard when I heard about it is that he is also the founder of an organization called Survivors of Childhood Sex Abuse. And it's an advocacy and a support group for victims and survivors of this horrific crime, horrific abuse. So I want to welcome tonight from Fort Worth, Texas, Richard Weimer. Richard, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Richard?
I'm doing okay, but please don't promote my city because we want it to stay just the way it is.
Okay, we'll do. But I'm so glad you're here tonight. It is an honor. And I know your bio, and like everybody's bio, once you start telling the story, it starts unfolding, then becomes to where, wait, you have a guest, and we don't even let him on. But I want to throw you right into the mix of this tonight and ask you just a few questions. If you're from Fort Worth, Texas, is that the base city of the SCSA organization that you're involved with?
Well, we're incorporated in Delaware, but yes, stop from an operational perspective, Fort Worth, Texas. Yes, sir.
Okay. And what actually does that organization do? And then how did you get involved in creating that? And then we're going to get to the why on the other side, which is going to unfold everything.
Sure. There was another organization that did the same type of work that we do. I started the organization in New Orleans, that chapter of the organization. And they promoted me to national. Things got busy, so I'm not with them anymore. Another gentleman took over the chapter. As you can imagine, in New Orleans, most of the victims are victims of the church. And one day, I made the news that person went to work for the Archdiocese. And it did a little bit more than trigger everybody. That person, they hold support groups, and that person knew everybody's intimate business. And the phones just started ringing off the hook. It was three full days. I'll never forget it. The first couple of days, I stayed up 24 hours a day taking calls. And we're talking about people in crisis. Three of them had suicidal ideations. One of them had a trauma-induced seizure. And at some point, I needed sleep. And we got a couple of guys in Australia to take the nighttime shift and take the calls. After about 3 days, it calmed down. We made an impromptu Facebook group for everybody to convene in, sort of living in exile. And we just started supporting each other right there. The New Orleans media, but they didn't leak it. We had no idea, but they said that we were starting our own organization. So we thought about it and why not? And so, yeah, we started an official organization, a 501c3 nonprofit. And it's been, we started that in February 11th of this year. We already have over 1,000 members, members from Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Canada, the UK, Brazil, and it's growing exponentially. And that's the organization in a nutshell. And the most important thing that we do is advocacy work to support our victims and survivors. That's really important. If you know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12th step, they know that if you don't master the 12th step, you will drink again. And we don't make people do step work, don't get me wrong, but we practice the 12th step in fellowship, service to another. So that's the most important thing that we do. We do advocacy work on behalf of the survivors. A couple of months ago, we were able to get the law changed in Louisiana. We wanted to extend the statute of limitations from 7 years to 35 years. And we just busloaded victims and survivors to the Capitol, and they testified before legislative hearings and Senate hearings. And their testimony was so compelling that they completely eliminated the statute of limitations and gave us a 3-year look back window, which was nothing short of incredible. We fact check the archdiocese and diocese list of credibly accused, and we find, believe it or not, we find errors. And so we expose those errors and expose those pedophile priests as well. So those are just some of the activities that we do.
It sounds like you keep pretty busy to doing that. Richard, from somebody that just casually came across tonight, we have our own niche of listeners that listen each week, but somebody that just casually come across and don't know much about the program or this issue, this problem, this epidemic that we have within ourselves of the world of child sexual abuse. How big of a problem, Richard, is this and has this been for many years? And from your perspective?
Well, it's absolutely staggering. So if you can imagine, the Catholic Church gets a lot of press, and that's where we think all the pedophiles are, but that couldn't be a bigger myth at all. I read a psychology paper out of Stanford University, and they estimate that there's 4 million victims of childhood sex abuse that haven't come forward or told their stories yet. And I think that number is low, very low.
Yeah. You know, I always talk about this almost every week, and I'll try not to belabor now, but, you know, they claim that there's, you know, 1 out of 4, 1 out of 7 has been sexually abused before the age of 18, female or male. Do you think that number is even close to being accurate?
No. I think it's higher, and well, because it's so underreported, I don't think we'll ever know.
Yeah. Really now, with what's going on in the headlines, because almost every day, Richard, I'm sure you know more of this than I ever will. As you open up the paper or scan on the internet, we're starting to see what's going on with the Boy Scouts right now, because I think the bankruptcy thing is getting ready to roll. I'm sure you're watching and reading and know that intimately. They're starting to settle cases and trying to shut this thing down to save face if it's possible. Has child sexual abuse always been part of, from your knowledge of what experience you have with Boy Scouts, from the get-go? I mean, has this been the kind of thing?
I believe so. The founder of the Boy Scouts was a pedophile. I believe so. In my case, my Boy Scout troop was formed for the express purpose of having access to children by a ring, an international ring of pedophiles.
So your whole troop unit was started by pedophiles.
Yes.
For that one purpose.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
International. What they would do is they would canvass the neighborhoods and look for single moms and ingratiate themselves to them, and they would recruit the boys into the troop. Should have been a red flag for my mom, because the Boy Scout troop was so far from my house, a different part of the city. Men would fly in from out of town to have sex, mostly European men. I was abused by, at the time, the owner of the New England Patriots. So these are, you know, well-to-do, powerful individuals. My scout leader nicknamed me Doorknob because everybody gets a turn. So that's how bad it was.
And your case, it went to the courts, correct?
Yeah, it did. I testified, and all of them went to jail. They were all convicted. With the exception of one, they all died in prison.
Wow. Does that give you any gratification or peace?
Yeah, because one thing that victims lack is a sense of justice has been done.
Yeah.
You know, that's huge. So in my case, it served not so much as a child, because, you know, you don't have those emotions like that, you know, adult emotions. But as I got older, I realized that I had a sense of justice, that they were put away, that they wouldn't have access to children anymore. And the Boy Scouts were actually pretty good with me. They paid for my psychological, my therapy for the rest of my life, regardless of the bankruptcy that we're involved in. So they've handled it a lot better than the Catholic Church has.
Okay, and we're going to get into that later. But so the Boy Scouts, when you testified, there was charges, people went to prison, jail, they got involved, they're helping you with your therapy and financing, paying for that, even though whatever goes on now with Boy Scouts, that's going to be a lifelong, not a benefit, but a award from the court that they were forced to do.
They negotiated that outside the judicial system.
Okay. Now, before we take our first break, you have a person on the line, Steve, and he is online too, and he has a question for you. And I think this would be a good time and for you to listen to the question and then answer it, and then we'll take our first break. Steve, are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here.
Hey, Steve, you got a question tonight? How are you?
Well, I didn't have a question. Richard invited me. Hey, Richard, Steve McAvoy.
Hey, Steve, never heard of you.
No, Richard invited me to, you know, be available. And, you know, I want to make myself available so that people know that this is not a, you know, a one-time situation. There are a lot of us out here that suffer, and there's people that I've been involved with that when I put my story out online came forward to me and said, gosh, I was sexually abused, but they still have not sought help. And, you know, this is what this is about. It's about helping others.
Yeah.
And getting people together.
And when did, and Richard or Steve, either way, but when did this start affecting you guys as far as weight? This is getting up into my gray matter. It's affecting who I have become. It is affecting who I'm going to be. I can't get through a day without the horror of thinking about those days. How did this abuse affected you?
Want to go, Steve?
Richard, yeah, you want me or you?
Go ahead, Richard, first, and then we'll jump to Steve.
Yeah, so, yeah, for me, what I did is I stayed very, very busy. I don't have repressed memories. I know I was, you know, abused. And what I did after I tried to commit suicide at 19, I just filed it away. And I got really, really, really busy. I took my academic career very, very seriously. Got my PhD in computer science. After that, I focused on my family. I focused on my career. I didn't drink one drop of alcohol my entire adult life up to 47. And what happens is you see TV news all the time, pedophile arrested, teacher arrested, priest arrested. And it gets to you. And so I started drinking really bad. And when the Sandusky case came around, I think media did too much of a good job in terms of describing the physical abuse. And that just threw me over the wall. And that's when I came forward.
So sometimes the news talking about the details of what happened, for instance, in the shower room, you know, in that university, in that case, triggered emotions, and it kind of led you to, hey, I need something to deaden this.
Yeah, it did. And it wasn't just the shower, but they described how he had a room downstairs, his own pedophile man cave that his wife never went to. One of my abusers in the Boy Scouts was the same way. The lady of the house looked the other way while I was molested in the house. So that was really my trigger.
So, Steve, what about you real quick in a nutshell? We're getting ready to take a break in about 30 seconds. When did it start to affect you emotionally and you started to hit a brick wall?
Well, I'll give you a brief intro because I only have a few minutes or a few seconds, but I'll stay online. at 13, I started stealing alcohol from my parents' house and started drinking at the age of 13. And started repressing the memories of 2 months of rape and sexual abuse against me. As well, you know, that would happen in front of students as well. So that's, you know, and I repressed all that until 2018. And that's when my story really started coming forward.
Yeah, so 3 years ago. So this is still fresh for you to be talking about it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's about my same Very time of so. Where I started talking about it. Yeah, about 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, hang with us, Steve. We're going to take our first commercial break. If you want to get involved with this, and oh my, it looks like my phone is going bonkers with text, which is good. That means people are listening and watching, and we've struck a heart chord. And I got a feeling, being men tonight, this is going to hit a little deeper than sometimes the shows do, because men... and we'll talk about that on the other side of this, but a little bit about how it affects men, possibly a little bit different.
Okay. I'll be here.
Okay, we'll keep it right there, Steve. We'll be right back. Call us at 888-627-6008, and we're going to take our first commercial break. We'll be right back with Richard and his friend Steve on the other side of this break. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. All right, welcome back to Houston, Texas Live, and we have Richard with us from Fort Worth, and Steve with us, and they are willing to talk about some stories that happened in their life. Richard, when did you first tell the first person what was going on with you? Unlike Steve, was 3 years ago. What was your date of that first reveal? Remember?
It was around that period when, I first was triggered. I told my wife. She was conjugal relations stopped immediately. When I told her I was going to go public, she forbade me from going public because we weren't going to put that shame on the family. So the marriage didn't work out for other reasons too. It'll be in my book coming up, but I was compelled to. I stood up at a Knights of Columbus meeting and told them I wasn't going to take the pedophile training course because my abusers weren't in a position to teach me how to not be a pedophile. And that caused some uproar. Because of my drinking, I had pancreatitis, and my priest visited me and at my bedside, and he offered me the anointing of the sick, which I needed. But then he reminded me of the contract that I had signed, a non-disclosure agreement. And that was kind of odd because it happened in New Orleans, 535 miles away. And this is it was an order versus a diocesan priest. So it occurred to me that they had already broken their own non-confidentiality agreement. And so I had to weigh whether, you know, whether I would be sued if I came forward. And I came to the conclusion that, you know, if they're going to sue me for breaking the agreement, and they sue a victim of childhood sex abuse, I'll be a poster boy for that story too. So,
well, how difficult is it, Richard?
It's very
difficult. To come out and tell the details, like you're getting ready to reveal in a book. But you've been on the stand. You've been investigated by, you know, the FBI, asking you questions, and police, and all kinds of people. But how difficult is it to actually start revealing and sharing with people what's going on?
It was very, very at first. Remember when I first testified, I was 11 years old, and so if you can imagine, you have a kid on the stand. And it's nothing but adults, media, and the attorney, especially for the pedophile, kind of tears you apart on the stand. So that was very difficult. I've been to court many, many times, most recently for the cop that molested me in federal court in North Carolina. And so I get better and better and better at it. When I first started doing advocacy work, which was about 9 years ago, even though I thought that I was far along in my healing, to hear other people's stories, there's a bit of vicarious trauma that goes on. So I had to work through that. It was difficult at first, but it's almost conversational now. It's easy to talk about.
What kind of damage, does it do to the, survivor if they don't come and talk about it, at least release it to someone, to a journal, to a doctor, to a counselor, to somebody? What kind of damage does that do from your perspective of what you've done with your organizational work?
It does a lot of damage. The way that victims matriculate through life, if they don't come forward, they got cortisol constantly dripping in their body, which isn't healthy because it turns off your immune system, causes a lot of physical health problems. They tend to self-medicate. Well, first off, without exception, they have clinical depression, anxiety disorder, PTSD. Sometimes they have dissociative disorder. And so when they don't seek help, they tend to self-medicate with alcohol and drugs. For me, drugs never really stuck. I tried everything one time, but drugs didn't really stick. Alcohol wasn't my problem. Alcohol was my solution. I got really, really bad alcoholic, you know, in recovery though.
Alcohol helped numb the pain.
It absolutely did. But here's the deal. It doesn't work after a period of time. And when that happens, suicide. And to give you an example, when my story first came out in the local news in New Orleans, one of my friends, it turns out, was molested by the same man. His sister walked in on it, caught him, broke it up, but she never said anything. And when my story hit the news, she committed suicide. I tried to commit suicide when I was 19. A little bit over a year ago, one of our advocates, Nate Lindstrom, committed suicide. So what we have forever. There's no fix for what we have. We will have it forever. And the only thing that we can try to do is manage it successfully.
When in that managing, how much weight is put on your work? And maybe Steve can jump in on this too, with helping other people. Is there a huge healing in that process of grabbing somebody else's hand along the journey? Steve, let me ask you that. Is there a great benefit in that?
The biggest benefit, you know, that I do is recognizing that we're not alone.
Yeah.
And there are other people out there that are begging for help and don't realize it. And that was my biggest thing. I begged for help, you know, from the age of 13, and nobody recognized it until 2018. So from, you know, 1978, 77, till, you know, 2018,
4 years.
You know, I begged for help.
And how was that begging voiced?
Through alcohol.
So your actions, you and Richards, both were pretty well the same, that you reached for that self-medication, and in the same time, you were screaming, can somebody not see I'm hurting?
It was exactly that. I won't go into my 2018, 2019 story yet because we're not there yet, but those years were terrible. And like Richard even say, everything was focused on family and work. And that's what we did. I raised my kids and I took care of everything. But when my kids were gone, I had nothing else there.
So then you're what, alone in a room?
Pretty much. Yeah. You know, if it wasn't my wife, I'd be dead.
Yeah. Richard, how much healing do you receive?
What's that?
I was asking Richard how much healing he receives from people that you have run into in your organization since beginning it that have joined forces with you and say, hey, I'm on this team. We're going to do this together. I want to help you out. I want to be there to help as many people. That must feel pretty good, right?
It feels extremely good. You know, like I said, the 12th step, you know, service to another. We had a gentleman in Jonesville, Louisiana, and the church turned him away. They wouldn't give him communion. So we have a whistleblower priest in Buffalo, New York, that got the bishop to resign. They suspended him. So I travel from Texas. He travels from New York. A gentleman by the name of Joe traveled from Monroe, Louisiana. We converged down there, held a mass for him, gave him communion. So that's what we do. When we have a brother hurting or a sister, we circle the wagons and take care of them.
Okay, now we had the spotlight on the Boy Scouts. I mean, and obviously you've had that battle. Mm-hmm. And in that mentioning, you've mentioned the church a lot. From what we're starting to see at the tip of the iceberg of what is going on, and not only, because I don't want to be accused of just picking on cat, every church denomination has these demons. It's just that the Catholic Church seems to have got the media attention because maybe of their hierarchy or whatever, but it's, you know, maybe because of the numbers. But what kind of situation are we dealing with in the church with sexual abuse?
Well, the problem is that the response isn't pastoral. First off, they're not doing the right thing. They're lawyering up. We had over 50 cases in New Orleans that were in civil court. They filed bankruptcy. They're solvent. They have over $100 million in assets. But they moved it over to federal court in the bankruptcy. So now the archbishop doesn't have to testify. All of these depositions are sealed now. And so that, you know, they did morally the absolute wrong thing, And it's putrid. It's toxic to a victim or a survivor when they don't act, you know, because there are high moral authority, and they're lying and they're lawyering up, and it's absolutely the wrong response. And so no wonder that we're viscerally offended by it.
When you were abused by the priest in the high school, was you aware that, or did you think I'm the only one, or was you very aware of others around you that was just the way things were going, or how was that all played out in your story?
It was very humbling. I always knew in the back of my head that there was one or two more. And what we know about pedophiles is that they never have just one victim, and they will always, always reoffend. The rate of recidivism is super high. So I knew that there was
Sorry,
a couple.
Richard, can
Go ahead.
I knew that there was a couple, but when my story went public, they came out of the woodwork. It was incredible. Many, 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 many people. It was on the news almost nightly for a couple of months.
Wow. We have a supporter of yours, and I think another friend of yours on line four, John, John Anderson, and he's going to just come on and just give you some encouragement. John, what's on your mind tonight? Welcome.
Yes, thank you for having me tonight. How are y'all?
Appreciate it, John. Thank you.
Awesome. Hey, John. Awesome. Yes, this is my brother you're talking to tonight, I tell you. Since Richard and I have gotten together, the world of chasing pedophiles is no longer going to be in existence anymore, because we have actually gotten 80, okay, that have been put away or have been recognized now. And what I want to really throw at you on this, now, you ready for this?
Sure.
How many do you think out of those 80, all related to the archdiocese, were actually registered as a sex offender?
Oh, I would put money on single digit percentage.
Absolutely zero.
Zero.
The only one that was ever going to be put in jail was George Brignatt, who was my rapist, okay? And that didn't occur until 2019, and they died. So they have none whatsoever.
So what kind of problem is this when they're allowed to transfer or any type of leader in a denomination or whatever, that they're allowed to transfer to another location or whatever and never have to register? So there's no tracking on them. They can just go do it someplace else.
That is such a great point that you bring it up. And that has been the major, major problem of this whole system, a breakdown since day one. It's called self-policing. And it's also called that there's a law, you know, within, you know, the system. And they kind of, you know, filter everybody within their wing. It's canon law is how it's gone. And they do. They ship them from place to place. You know, until finally something does give within the system of law. Okay, I'm talking about local, city, federal, or state. Without that, it never occurred. Now, the archdiocese, because of Richard, okay, and I will admit to that, and myself and a couple other people, we have pushed this since day one. Our number one thing is justice. And the person that you have on your phone today, I'm telling you, is my partner for life, and we will put an end to this. I can promise you that. We already have. You know, in Louisiana, we stopped the statute of limitations, okay? There is none. Who gets that done in a Catholic state? I tell you who does. SCSA, okay? It took a lot, and I want you to know that Richard was a huge, huge part of that. And not only that, I showed up for myself 4 days in a row with a suit and tie on to make sure. Because let me tell you, this bill was not going to go through. The problem with the bill was that it was undergarnished, what I would call it, okay? They wanted a certain amount. They wanted a denims put on, and I was against it from day one. Well, do I have to take what I can get after 45 years? I guess so. Nope. Guess what? Everybody, I'm talking state representatives, the senators stepped up, and they are the ones that really did this to the state of Louisiana, besides us bringing it to their attention. These people came out the woodwork and said, why is there any statute? Why should there ever be any statute on any type of harming children with rape in the world? It's ridiculous.
Great. Thanks, John.
So I'm here with my brother Richard, and I want to thank y'all for having him on tonight. I love all you guys. I really do.
Richard, do you think, thank you, John, for listening in, and feel free to jump in anytime for the next segment. Richard, do you feel that there'll be a day that self-policing isn't the issue anymore, that once they get charged or excommunicated or relocated or whatever they do, that there'll be some type of registry that they're mandated to do, or they're always going to brush this under the rug?
Well, we're responsible for messages of hope. And I do believe so, because we've seen an uptick and arrest just over the past couple of years. The problem is that people forget their attention spans are very, very short. And so that's why doing media is so important, because it raises awareness. There will always be pedophiles. The question is, are we going to tolerate it? Are we going to tolerate the church systematically institutionalizing it? You know, if you think about it, if the average age is 52, if they stop molesting kids right now, they're still going to be dealing with this scandal for the next 50, 60 years.
So there's a lot of generations that we haven't tapped into yet.
We haven't. And that's one of our initiatives, too, to try to get victims and survivors to come forward earlier in life so they don't have to live a life of pure hell.
Yeah. And, you know, that's what I want to talk about on the other side of this, because it took me 35 plus years. It's taken Steve more than that, probably, before he started coming out. So we're going to take our last break. If you want to call, get involved, 888-627-6008. But on the other side of this, I really want to find out, how do we encourage a safety net for those people to be able to come out and experience some of the healing of disclosing what's happened to them in the past? And what's the pros and the cons in doing that? Call in 888-627-6008. We'll be right back after our last commercial break for a final segment of Breaking the Silence live in Houston, Texas. Be right back.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right. Welcome back. We have Richard with us from Fort Worth. We have Steve and John from other places in the country. So it's great to have everybody on tonight. Before, Richard, we get into maybe what we just talked about on the other side of the break. If somebody wants to get in touch with you about SCSA, I want to make sure all that information comes out now, and we'll try to repeat it before the end of the program. What's the website? What's an email or contact information? Can they do that through the website? What can they do to get in touch with you?
So the website is www.scsaorg.org. And if you can't remember that, just Google SCSA sex abuse. We're the first one on the list.
Okay, fantastic. And is there a contact page on there if they want to?
Absolutely.
Okay, so they want to reach out for help, resources for them to be able to get to?
Absolutely. We have support meetings every Saturday. We do one-on-one support as well. We have licensed, credentialed psychology professionals on staff. You on the website, please join. Doesn't cost a dime. None of the services that we offer, we charge for. It's all free. There's a contact form there. And we'll get back to you. We won't let you fall. We will return the contact.
If somebody's listening to the
Richard,
program.
Can I add to that, please?
Absolutely.
Richard,
is it Steve?
Can I add to that, please? Yes, I'm Steve.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
You know, Richard, you know, one of the things I put into that was, I'm going to put into this, is that we also have females, because I've actually put, you know, sexually abused females involved with female contacts through SCSA. Mm-hmm. So I want to know, this is not just a male situation.
Yes.
Okay, so your organization deals with anyone.
That is correct, male or female. And you don't have to be a victim or survivor of the church. All you need to be is a survivor of childhood sex abuse, because, you know, the biggest demographic is family or a friend of the family, the drunk uncle, the babysitter. So anybody who has suffered in the past from childhood sex abuse is more than willing, more than able to, and we welcome you to join our organization.
Walk me through that. Somebody that's listening anybody can join in on this one. Let's say it was 5 years ago before I told anyone, and I released a book 3 years ago, but I hadn't done that yet. And I'm sitting here listening to the show for the first time and go, I want, need desperately to tell my story, to talk to somebody, to release this. Mm-hmm. What's your wisdom to be able to help me through that? If there's somebody listening, and I know there is, that needs to release it, what's the best path to take anyway?
Contact us. We'll walk you through the process. You don't have to go public to get help. You can remain anonymous. So you don't have to worry about that. But the number one thing is that you do reach out. Also, therapy is extremely important. What works for me is ego state therapy is both the primary and an adjunct to EMDR therapy. Medication, you know, you have to take a holistic approach to healing, and you can't be, please don't be afraid to reach out and get help. We can help you with that and guide you through that process.
Steve or John, anything to add to that?
Yes, I actually do have a lot to say to that if I can.
Sure, John.
Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Jump in.
Yes, I actually run the men's support division, okay, for SCSA, and also work with other organizations, okay? And to answer that specific question, the way that I would handle that would be to call me immediately. You know, I want to get to know you first thing, and depending on, you know, your needs, I'm going to listen to you. And I'm going to make sure that you're heard. And I'm not going to, you know, make sure that you're swept under the rug anymore, because that's what happened for too long, you know? So the biggest part about this is that this is the biggest message that I have to say to someone, is that, first of all, you know, the word trust is a very touchy subject, okay, when it comes down to opening up and to discussing, you know, some of these darkest and, you know, deadly, you know, inner, you know, black things in your heart, your soul that comes out every day that you just want to release, but don't know how to do it. Well, it takes somebody else that knows, okay, that it's been through, to walk you through the process and what it takes, you know, because not everybody's the same. And number one, you know, my goal is to find common ground with people to make sure they understand that I know exactly where they're coming from. I've been homeless myself. I have been raped as a child. I'm a 45-year survivor, and I don't have anything to hide. In fact, I give everything I have in my heart and my soul to help these people every day of my life, and I do it for free.
Yeah.
Today, just to let you know, I walked up to a homeless guy that I helped support in the area, and I gave him a $200 acoustic guitar, okay? Just because I know he needs it in his life. So these are the things that I think I specialize in, is really, you know, mending with people and knowing what they've been through. And because of the experience level, it takes a lot of that to be there. You know,
yeah.
I will always recommend the right doctor, but counseling and also, you know, and a psychologist, listen, these people, you don't have to get pushed into anything. But I would definitely recommend, no matter what, is that you bond with this person, okay? You find that right person for you. And it doesn't have to be the first one. It doesn't have to be the 10th one. It could be the first or the 10th. but that's for you to decide. But along the way, you know, being that we have weekly support meetings, you're not going to find that too often. And I can tell you this, I've been associated with many, many organizations in my lifetime, and you're not going to find a better place than SCSA to be.
That's awesome.
No question about that.
Tell me how big of an issue, any of you that want to say it, is trust in relationships after something like this has happened to you? Am I the only one that deals with trust issues, or does everybody have that as a major hurdle?
So trust is a very, very rare and valuable commodity in the survivor community. We have serious trust issues, and it also affects our relationships, intimacy.
Oh, absolutely.
I've been married 3 times now. The last one's the greatest. That's a love story for the ages. But it takes a while for us to establish trust, and especially when, think about it, that's how the organization was formed. We were betrayed. Our trust was violated. So,
Steve, you were getting ready to say something.
I said beyond belief of what trust is, I know Rich has been married 3 times. You know, I'm still with my same wife. And I walked in the door at 10 o'clock in the morning, and this is how I met Richard and got reconnected with John and some other people. I walked in at 10 o'clock in the morning drunk and said, look, either you're going to get me help or I'm going to kill myself. And that's how our connections came together.
Wow. That's powerful. In the last few...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and finish the thought.
My whole thought was the first time that I got sober in intervention was someone telling me that, remember, if you kill yourself, you'll be the murderer of your daughter's father. And that stuck with me for life.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that wisdom there. Richard, you have a my method of telling people my story was through a book. You're doing that now, and I'm honored to say I've been able to read several of your chapters that you allowed me to. Tell me about the book. When can we anticipate that? How's it going? And in the last few minutes, anything else you want to share with our listeners?
I do have a publisher. It's scheduled for January of this year. Yeah, and it's if you're missing any detail in this interview, you're going to have all the detail that you want. It's been a challenge to write. You know, I'm not a professional author, so I don't have a writer's block. But it's very, very painful to write about. And you have to strike a balance when you're doing the detail, because you don't want it to become a romance novel for pedophiles, right?
Right.
It's challenging in that way. But it's something I've been working on for a while. It's something that I have to do, and you can expect it in January.
So it tells the whole story, or only portions of it, or
story
from beginning to today.
Yes, that's okay. called the Crucible.
Crucible, and it will be available all around the country, but probably Amazon will be an easy way to jump on. Will it be in print and Kindle?
Print, Kindle, and audiobook.
Oh, are you going to do your own audio? Mm-hmm. I have not done that. I'd like to do that, but that's going to be powerful. Wow. The Crucible. Fantastic. Anything that anybody wants to share before, which is just last thoughts of anybody that's listening that you would like to make sure we don't leave any stone unturned?
Come forward. You can be anonymous if you want to. You can share as much as you want to, or not share at all. Sometimes just attending our meetings and listening can be helpful. You don't have to suffer for the rest of your life. There's people out there just like you. And like I said earlier, you know, with our victims and survivors, we circle the wagons. We're not going to let you drown.
So you all agree that everybody that's listening can be told, and it's the truth, you're not alone. There'll be somebody there to help you.
Hey, you know, Steve, you know, when I got out of therapy after wanting to commit suicide, when I told my wife that, one of the first contacts I had was with Richard. And not long after that, I wrote my story because I was working with psychiatrists and therapists, and I posted it online, and that has gone worldwide. Uh-huh. And it's okay. It wasn't our fault. We should not hold the shame and the guilt.
Yeah, it's not your fault.
And we
believe need to hear that.
We believe you.
And isn't that funny? That's one of the last things that we let go.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
For some reason, that just sticks on, and shower after shower after shower does not wash that off. And nope. But boy, that's a tough one. Shame and guilt.
Yeah, the common misconception. Take a Band-Aid and put it on our butt and everything's fine. It doesn't work that way.
Right. John, you got a thought?
No, it doesn't.
Yes, I do want to add to this situation is that, you know, being in this serious state of our society that we live in these days, child protection is everything.
Yeah.
Because without us, nobody else is going to do it, period. Okay. But I can tell you this, in order for someone to come forward, they have to understand one thing, okay, is that we're not going to be sympathetic, okay? We're not going to hold sympathy for you because we already know what that is. You know, we are all about one thing, and that's being empathetic, okay? We have love, and we have power, and we have each other, and that will never leave. And I can guarantee that if you pick that phone up, you will change your life tomorrow. Tomorrow. It can happen one day.
Yep.
All you got to do is pick the phone up and call. And I promise you, I will be there. I'll be there waiting on.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you, John, for joining us tonight. And Richard, I can't tell you how thrilled I am to have you. And I think this has been very powerful. Obviously, I can't even scroll down fast enough to get to all my texts. And I haven't got all my emails yet, but I will just as soon as the program's over, about people that you've impacted. And hopefully they'll be contacting SCSA org.org. And that's the best way to get in touch with you. Go ahead, Richard.
You have to put the www in. It doesn't work any other way. So it's www.scsaorg.org. Or you can just Google SCSA sex abuse or the first result.
Fantastic. And Richard, thank you for being on the program. Thank you for having your friends here tonight, too. And I appreciate them sharing. And if there's anything, when we get closer to the book coming out, I'd love to have you back on. And we'll let people know.
Very, very grateful that you had us on today. We so appreciate you and the work that you're doing, too. And I hope you're living your best life.
Okay. Thank you, Richard, so much from Fort Worth, Texas. And thanks for being here. Like we like to do every show, at the end of every show, I say the same thing, even though it's not the exact same words, but it's the same intent. And I think these three gentlemen express this to you tonight. Mm-hmm. No matter what's happened to you, it's not your fault. What's happened to you, you're not alone. And no matter what's happened to you, what you've gone through, whether it was today, tomorrow, or 40 years ago, like in Steve's instance, I want to let you know there's always hope. There's always hope. And there's people like these three guests tonight that are waiting to help you. I'm here waiting to help you. Reach out to somebody now. Yes. Thank you for joining us tonight. We'll see you next week. Have an awesome week next week for another edition of Breaking the Silence live from Houston, Texas, 8 p.m. Central Time.
Thank you for joining us. Have a great week. God bless. Take care. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.